How do you say? During the 1980s, the hard-working publishers in Uganda warmly welcomed a steady influx of eager missionaries. Some were New Gilead graduates, and others had been compelled to leave missionary assignments in Zaire, now Democratic Republic of the Congo. The increase in missionaries in Kampala and Jinja made it possible to cover those densely populated territories more thoroughly, and the missionaries were thrilled to find the Ugandan field ripe for harvesting. Actually, the challenge was not just finding interest, but cultivating it. Full of momentum from his months of Gilead training, Mats Holmquist was eager to master the local language in order to cultivate people's interest in the truth. By this time, Fred Nienda was a special pioneer in Entebbe, and his translating and interpreting skills were put to good use teaching the new missionaries to speak understandable Luganda, a language full of potential tongue twisters. In fact, Mats found the challenge of learning his new language quite daunting. "How do you say God's kingdom in Luganda?" asked Mats in one of his first language classes. "Obwakabaka Bwakatonda," came Fred's rhythmic reply. "That sounds impossible," thought Mats, regretting that he had even asked the question. Nevertheless, Mats made remarkable progress and gained a good command of Luganda. The following is from page 113 of the printed edition.
He finally found the true religion. A sister asked a missionary, Mats Holmquist, to meet with Mutesa Sira Yafesi, who had been a pastor in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Now, he was interested in Jehovah's Witnesses and had prepared a list of 20 neatly printed questions. When he met Mats, he presented the list to him. After a two-hour Bible discussion, Mutesa Sira stated, "I think I have finally found the true religion. Please come and visit me in my village. There are other people who want to know more about Jehovah's Witnesses." 5 days later, Mats and another missionary set out on a motorcycle to visit Mutesa Sira in Kalangalo, a 70-mile trip over difficult and muddy paths through tea plantations. They were surprised when Mutesa Sira took them to a thatched hut that had a sign saying Kingdom Hall. Yes, he had already prepared a structure that could be used for Bible study and meetings. There were 10 others who were interested as a result of the truths Mutesa Sira had shared with them. Bible studies were started, and Mats, undeterred by the long distance, conducted them twice a month. The Bible studies progressed well. More than 20 people have become publishers in Kalangalo, and a congregation is flourishing in the nearby town of Mitiana. In the meantime, Mutesa Sira made rapid progress and was baptized. He is now well into his 70s and serves as a congregation elder. Returning to the account.
The ingathering prospers. Despite the difficulties Ugandans experienced through most of the 1980s, the response to Bible truth was extraordinary. The number of publishers mushroomed by more than 130%, from 328 in 1986 to 766 in 1990. New groups were springing up all over the country. In Kampala, the number of congregations doubled. The congregation in Jinja rejoiced to see the number of publishers more than triple, while the group in Iganga quickly became a full-fledged congregation. "The growth was so rapid," recalls an elder in Jinja, "that we wondered where all the new publishers were coming from. For a while, we had to schedule time nearly every Sunday to meet with those who wanted to become unbaptized publishers." Harvesting a bigger field. One of the factors contributing to the remarkable growth was the outstanding pioneer spirit of the brothers. Just like the first century preachers, Paul, Silas, and Timothy, full-time servants in Uganda offered themselves as an example to imitate. With the growing need in the field and such fine examples, many zealous publishers were motivated to expand their ministry. Young and old, single and married, male and female, and even some with families to support, reinforced the ranks of hard-working pioneers. On average, more than 25% of all publishers shared in some form of pioneer service during the late 1980s. Some have been able to continue in full-time service up to now. The pioneers readily supported special annual preaching campaigns that were fondly called Macedonia campaigns based on the text in Acts 16, 9 and 10. Such campaigns have continued over the years. Congregations preach in unassigned or seldom work territory for up to 3 months. Additionally, some regular pioneers are appointed as temporary special pioneers in territories where there is greater need. The results have been very encouraging. Many sincere people have expressed appreciation for these campaigns, which introduced them to the truth, and numerous new groups and congregations have been formed. In one campaign, missionaries Peter Abramov and Michael Rice preached in the town of Kabale and contacted Margaret Tofayo, who had previously studied the Bible. She was convinced that what she had been taught was the truth, and she had already been sharing her beliefs informally. To provide whatever help they could, the missionaries gave her their only copy of Reasoning from the Scriptures. When the brothers visited Margaret one last time before their departure, she surprised them with a specially prepared meal. They were overwhelmed by her kindness and generosity, but felt uneasy because they realized that she had cooked her only chicken. They knew that the eggs she used to get from this fowl had supplemented her family's meager diet. "Don't worry," she said. "You have given me more during your visit than I am giving you with this meal." She was eventually baptized and continued as a zealous publisher until her death. The rapid growth can also be attributed to the way the brothers used the excellent publications. Although we try to improve our skills as teachers, says Motz, mentioned earlier, it is the Bible and the publications that make an impact on people and move them to make changes in their lives. Even those who cannot read well but who thirst for the truth can have their hearts touched by our practical brochures. Contending with obstacles. The exciting progress during the late 1980s, however, did not come without challenges. A coup d'état staged in July 1985 saw the military once again take over the government. Security deteriorated as before, and guerrilla warfare intensified. Fleeing troops went on the rampage, looting property and shooting people at random. For a while, the battle raged around the area where the missionaries lived in Jinja. One day their home was raided by soldiers, but when the intruders learned the identity of the missionaries, they did not destroy anything and took very little. Then, in January 1986, yet another regime came to power and made an effort to restore some stability to the country. The new government soon had to come to grips with a new and devastating foe, AIDS. When the pandemic struck during the 1980s, Uganda was one of the nations most affected. 1 million people are thought to have died, possibly more than those killed in 15 years of political turmoil and civil war. How did the disease affect our brotherhood? Some new brothers and sisters came into the truth with much zeal and energy, explains Washington Sentongo, a regular pioneer, only to be consumed by AIDS. They had been infected with the HIV virus before learning the truth. Others were infected by unbelieving mates. Sometimes it seemed that hardly a month would go by without hearing about the burial of someone we knew and loved, says Washington, and everyone was losing family members. Also, there was a lot of superstition about AIDS. Many people linked it to witchcraft and being cursed. This misguided outlook made people fearful, stirred up unfounded prejudices, and undermined reasoning ability. Nevertheless, our brothers and sisters loyally comforted one another with the resurrection hope and with reassurances of their genuine Christian love. As the 1980s drew to a close, there was a great deal of optimism in Uganda. Security was being restored, and the country was making an economic recovery. Infrastructure improved, and social programs were renewed or implemented. As more people placed greater emphasis on political ideals, however, the neutrality of Jehovah's Witnesses was at times misunderstood. In one instance, authorities arbitrarily stopped the construction of a kingdom hall. Permission for some assemblies was denied, and some missionaries had to leave the country when their permits expired. By the end of 1991, only 2 missionary brothers remained. What could be done to improve the situation? Eventually, a delegation of brothers met with authorities to explain our neutrality. Once the authorities understood our position, missionaries were permitted to return to Uganda. The work progressed unhindered, and in 1993, Uganda was happy to report 1,000 publishers. Then, it took only 5 more years to reach 2,000 Kingdom Proclaimers. Presently, there are about 40 missionaries doing fine work throughout the country. Translation speeds up the ingathering. The English language is used throughout the country. Luganda is, however, the most widely used local language, while more than 30 languages are spoken by various ethnic groups. Thus, a key factor that has contributed to faster growth in recent times has been the progress of translation work. "Although my mother was a faithful witness," says Fred Nienda, "she found the meetings far more meaningful when I translated study articles from English to Luganda. What I didn't realize was that I was getting practice for a much greater translation work." What did Fred mean? Shortly after he began pioneering in 1984, Fred was asked to teach a Luganda language course to the missionaries. The following year, he was invited to become a member of the Luganda translation team. Initially, he and the other translators did their work at home during their free time. Later, the team was able to do their translation work together full-time in a small room attached to a missionary home. Interestingly, during the ban in the mid-1970s, some issues of the Watchtower had been translated into Luganda and mimeographed. After a while, though, this project was discontinued. It was only in 1987 that the Watchtower was once again published in Luganda. Since then, the translation team has been enlarged, and the translators have worked hard to translate many more publications for the growing number of Luganda language congregations. Presently, almost half of all congregations in the country are Luganda-speaking. In time, our publications were also translated into other languages. There are now permanent full-time translation teams for Achole, Lukonzo, and Runyankore. In addition, individual publications have been translated into Atiso, Lugbara, Madi, and Rutoro. The Achole and Runyankore teams operate from translation offices in Gulu and Embarara, respectively, where those languages are predominantly spoken. This helps the translators to keep up their mother tongue and to produce a translation that is easily understood. At the same time, the local congregations enjoy the support of the translators. Without a doubt, translation work requires much effort and considerable resources. The diligent Ugandan translators, together with other translation teams worldwide, have benefited from advanced training in language comprehension and translation skills. The results have been well worth the effort and expense. More people in Uganda, from various tribes and peoples and tongues, are benefiting from reading Bible truth in their own language than ever before. Revelation 7, 9 and 10. As a result, by 2003, there were more than 3,000 Kingdom preachers in Uganda, and just 3 years later, in 2006, there were 4,005. Needed more places for worship. In earlier years, the brothers gathered together for meetings in private homes, community centers, and school classrooms. The first buildings to be used exclusively for Christian meetings were thatched roof adobe structures in the rural areas of Namaingo and Rusese. The initiative and efforts of the brothers in these two areas were clearly blessed, and congregations became firmly established there. In the towns, however, even a modest building represents a large investment, and economic conditions in Uganda made hopes for Kingdom Halls seem unrealistic. It was not until March 1988 that the first permanent Kingdom Hall was dedicated in Jinja. And what effort that construction required! Felling trees in a nearby forest, trucking logs out on muddy roads, and constructing the hall. Later, the brothers in Embale, Kampala, and Tororo also built Kingdom Halls using their initiative and expertise. Kingdom Hall construction gained impetus in 1999 when a construction group was established with support from the Regional Engineering Office at the South Africa branch. That branch appointed a crew of 9, which included 2 international servants and their wives. The eager crew quickly learned the job, and they were also able to train local brothers. The building program gained momentum, and 67 halls were completed, on average, within a month and a half each, a remarkable pace considering that power tools are few, water is often scarce, and the supply of construction materials is erratic. Most congregations in Uganda now enjoy their meetings in their own Kingdom Hall and experience the benefits of having a hall in their community. Interested people are more inclined to come to a proper place of worship than to a school classroom, so meeting attendance has mushroomed and congregations have experienced rapid growth. Coping with rapid expansion. The phenomenal growth in the congregations, however, was putting a strain on the limited venues available for assemblies and conventions. What could be done to find suitable places that did not require the brothers to travel long distances, especially from rural areas? A happy solution was found when approval was given to build expandable Kingdom Halls. These are regular-size halls with a large, open-air extension that has just a roof and a floor. When the rear wall of the Kingdom Hall is opened for an assembly, the larger audience can be accommodated using the covered area. Such halls have already been completed in Kajansi, Rusese, and Lira, and a fourth is under construction in Sita. Jehovah's blessing on the spiritual growth in Uganda has also required adjustments in organization. Before 1994, there was just one circuit for the whole country. Later, more circuits were formed to care for the increasing number of congregations and groups and the diversity of languages. Today, with 111 congregations and about 50 groups, Uganda has 8 circuits, 3 of which are Luganda-speaking. Apollo Mukasa, one of Uganda's circuit overseers, was baptized in 1972. In 1980, he entered full-time service instead of pursuing higher secular education. Does he regret his decision? "Far from it," says Apollo. "I have had so many rewarding experiences as a special pioneer and as a traveling overseer visiting congregations, and, in the early days, groups. I particularly enjoyed the advanced spiritual and organizational training at the Ministerial Training School." In addition to Apollo, more than 50 brothers from Uganda have received valuable education at the Ministerial Training School since 1994, when classes were first held at the Kenya branch. Many of these willing brothers provide vital assistance as special pioneers in smaller congregations and groups, while others serve their brothers and sisters as traveling overseers. In 1995, a country committee was appointed in Uganda to serve under the direction of the Kenya branch. One of the Kampala missionary homes became the home for a fledgling family of 8 full-time volunteers, which included the Luganda translation team. In September 2003, Uganda became a branch. We are now in paradise. For some time, the country committee had been trying to keep pace with the growth of the translation teams and care for other increasing office functions. 2 properties adjacent to the office in Kampala were purchased to fill the need. Eventually, though, larger facilities were required to organize further expansion. In 2001, the governing body gave approval for a 10-acre piece of land to be bought for new branch facilities on the outskirts of Kampala, close to the shore of Lake Victoria. Initially, the company best equipped to do the construction did not respond to our request because they were too busy to take on more work. But suddenly they changed their mind and amazingly submitted the most economical offer to build a new branch. Apparently, they had unexpectedly lost a large contract, prompting them to agree to build the branch as soon as possible. In January 2006, the Bethel family was delighted to move into the attractive, new 2-story, 32-room residence. The complex included an office building, a spacious dining room, a kitchen, and a laundry. The property also has an ecologically friendly sewage system, a warehouse for the shipping and literature departments, and buildings for a maintenance workshop, water storage, and an electric generator. "We are now in paradise," stated one brother enthusiastically. Only everlasting life is missing. The dedication talk was given on Saturday, January 20, 2007, by Anthony Morris, a member of the governing body. True knowledge becomes abundant. Throughout recent decades, in times both turbulent and tranquil, Jehovah's people in Uganda have learned what it is like to preach the word in favorable season and in troublesome season. In 2008, the 4,766 publishers rejoiced to be conducting 11,564 Bible studies and to have 16,644 in attendance at the memorial of Christ's death. Those figures, and the ratio of one publisher to 6,276 of the population, indicate that the fields here are still white for harvesting. John 4:35. At the same time, our brothers and sisters in Uganda have learned from bitter experience how suddenly circumstances can change and how quickly tests of faith can be thrust upon us. Nevertheless, their experiences have taught them to trust in Jehovah as well as in the guidance of His Word and the support of our worldwide brotherhood. An angel told the faithful aged prophet Daniel that in the time of the end, true knowledge would become abundant. With Jehovah's blessing, true knowledge has certainly become abundant in Uganda. No doubt, in this region where the mighty Nile has its source, abundant waters of truth will continue to bubble forth to satisfy all those who are thirsting for spiritual truth. As Jehovah continues to bless the work throughout the earth, we eagerly anticipate the time when everyone will be united in giving a mighty shout of praise to Jehovah for all eternity.